Welcome, everyone. As I was saying, this first part is going to be called what I'm terming Remembrance Sunday, because I think a lot of what we're all going through individually right now is a kind of awakening and a kind of remembrance of maybe why we're here, what we've got to do. And of course, as far as I can see, there's no one else going to sort this stuff out, you know. If not us, then who? Who else could you rely on? My dad always used to say to me, if they want a job doing properly, do it the same. So with that in mind, I was looking through some of the history yesterday, which comes from a fellow named R.W. Morgan. I think he was a Reverend R.W. Morgan, writing in the 1800s. And this is from the ancient knowledge and the facts about the Druids. And it occurred to me that I'm not going out New Age woo-woo on all of this. It's just simply what I understand to be the facts of the matter. And they are as I'm expressing here. So I wrote a piece about it for my website. And I'll just go through it to open up today's session. So the point is that the spiritual heritage of the British people lies entwined with the holy science of the Druids. In order to know where we are in space and time, it's incumbent upon us to realise from whence we came, both spiritually and otherwise. The ancients of these lands feared not death. In fact, some say they even sought it out. Can we tap into the spirit of our predecessors and shake off those barbed hooks of state dependency? That's what we're here, you know, many of you have been asking yourself that question. And that's what we're here to deal with this afternoon. I would say that yes. In fact, the time for us to do that is now. It's incumbent upon us to take action. And we've got to stand up to these enemies, namely the phony government and those who are acting as our banking overlords. All of them, and I was talking with Mike about this the other day, they're completely fake and phony as far as I'm concerned. There is nothing about these characters that really we should be concerned about at all. Because ultimately, all they've got at the end of it is the lies and deceptions, all of which are built on shifting sands. You know, it's all very flimsy when you start to basically hit them with the truth, the facts of the matter. And again, that's also what this afternoon's about, you know. The facts of the matter are here. This is what we can do. These are suggestions as to how we apply them, which, of course, is the application of wisdom. So if you think about the trivium, you've got the three strands. You've got the first part, which is where the information's coming in. Then you've got your reasoning part, where you're working through the logic. And then you've got the wisdom, which is how you're going to take action based on that which has come to your understanding and knowledge. Because, of course, without the action, all this takes us nowhere. And, you know, ask yourself the question, well, who benefits from that state of affairs where people don't take on those who would oppress them, those who would, you know, let's not mince our words, those who would kill them off. And, you know, it's fair to say, moving on from that, that many of these people who are operating in those legal and financial worlds are operating in a psychopathic system. I'm not suggesting they're psychopaths, but they may well be. It's so deep within the system that they're acting out these roles within it and causing, you know, ordinary men and women great loss. And again, this has to come to a stop. Now, the most positive aspect of all this is that for all the bogus education programming, all the bullshit television, the mass media manipulation, the advertising of all kinds, and the fog that they've placed over the people, it's not enough. They're still unable to completely control the population, because there are people popping up individually all over the shop who are suddenly waking up, looking around, saying, fuck, yeah, I see what's going on. And in spite, you see, the amount of effort that goes into keeping us and the rest of the population dumbed down tells you really exactly how fearful these people are underneath it all. Otherwise, why would they go to such great lengths? What are they so afraid of rising up in mankind? This realization may well take the individual to the point where he realizes that it's a journey of self-discovery, if you like, self-realization, that he's the one he's waiting for. It's not about some hero, external hero outside himself, It's about the individual waking up to their power within them, and of course, maybe for many of them, a realization that they are here to actually deal with some of these matters, no matter how Herculean the task may be, you know. And when we come together, that energy of the individual gets multiplied, because again, as many will say, what we're saying this afternoon doesn't really matter how we're saying it, it's the information that's coming through, it's the truth of the matter, you know. And from that will of course manifest a resonance, which if we're expressing the truth, you will just automatically tap into. The following is from the occult work of R.W. Morgan and Comyns Beaumont, who was operating in the 20th century and has done some incredible work into the real history, the ancient history of the world, and particularly of these lands. So what I'm about with this article is really asking people to just tap in into whatever, however they connect with that divine aspect of themselves, to tap into it and to feel the power that you have within, and then begin to do something about it in a wider sense. You know what I mean? So it's a case of focusing on the self-realization aspect, and then zooming out to see how your actions can resonate throughout your community and how you can manifest change as a consequence of that. Because make no mistake about it, that's how it's working, and that's what they know, and that's what they're so desperate to keep people away from, whether it's through psychological manipulation, through the injection of fear memes into them, or weapons of mass distraction, which is something I'm going to touch on in a bit. It's all happening, and they're all spending huge amounts of energy into trying to maintain this fake facade. If it turns out, for instance, that the current deluges that are being experienced in the southwest and the south of these lands are in fact a result of geoengineering manipulation made by the Heart Facility, then, you know, we're immediately faced with an actual example of an Agenda 21 eugenics program that is being applied to our brothers and sisters on these shores right now, as we speak. You know, there are many other ways of doing it, but, you know, this is the reality, this is how urgent it is, and this is where we are right now. From there, you can see that in times not that long ago, 200 years ago, the people who farmed these lands were well aware of the possibility of those lands being reclaimed by the sea or being subjected to floods, and they were able to put their own protections in place. They would sort it out, they would know exactly what they were doing. They wouldn't wait on some agency of government whereby you've got guys turning up with these ridiculous helmets on, there's like 6 inches of water, they're wearing life jackets, they're towing along some little old lass in a dinghy in 6 inches of water, all for a photo shot. And we have all these gormless politicians stood there pointing at various bodies and stretches of water, all for the photo opportunity, all utterly fake, utterly sham. And, you know, when you think about it like that, one can be forgiven if it starts to boil one's piss a little, you know. But we're not here to boil anyone's piss this afternoon. Maybe to let off some steam. So anyway, I dipped into this, and there were a couple of things that leapt out at me. This first quote is about the soul, okay? So we're actually dealing here with people out there who were systematically looking to kill us off, right? And our offspring and the rest of it. Your parents, perhaps. And this just resonated with me. So here's a section from it. The soul is a particle of the deity possessing in an embryo all his capabilities. Its action is defined and regulated by the nature of the physical organization it animates. The spiritual lies in the physical. In other words, to take action in these realms of existence is self-evidently a spiritual act. Why? Because it matters. Think about that expression. Because it matters. It's here in existence. And this existence, however you want to frame it, whichever source you want to attribute to it, is you know, it's godly. It's been created divinely. It's the godlike universal manifestation in matter. Whatever's going on. So anyone that says, oh, it's all an illusion anyway, we don't have to worry about it, you know, just let them get on with it, let them take your money, let them take your house. is, I would say, operating in a state of great imbalance, because they're locked into that side of them, which is it's the more female side, it's the right side of the brain, which prevents them from taking action. It's the more nurturing and caring aspect. Of course, the way is to be in the middle. As always, it's about balance. If we're lopsided, we have issues with our health. When we're resonating in the right vibration and everything's in balance, we have that harmony. And right now, we've got these satanic, psychopathic, would-be controllers who are locked in the left brain, trying to dominate or force people into, through various methods, into their right brain, whereby they're not really thinking critically, they're not able to apply that which they know, and there's something blocking them from taking action in the material world, because it matters. This is about the British Cymry, the ancient peoples of these lands. The Druidic religion was brought into Britain by the Romidae from the mountains of Noah or the Caucasus at the first emigration under Hugh Garden. Its leading principles were the following, and this is the bit that resonated with me. God is an infinite spirit whose nature is wholly a mystery to man in his present state. He is self-existence. From him all creation emanated, and into him it is always resolving and will always continue to resolve itself back. To the human mind, but not in himself, he necessarily presents a triple aspect in relation to the past, the present, and the future. The creator as to the past, the saviour or preserver as to the present, the recreator as to the future. In the recreator, the idea of the destroyer was also involved. The Druidic names of God were Dhu, Dion, Dovid, or David as it became, Kelly, Ior, Purid, Run, Ner. Matter is the creation of God. Without God, it cannot exist. Nature is the action of God through the medium of matter. Now, I think that is just beautiful, because it's just so simplistic, and it actually brings us back, if we were out of balance, to a point of clarity. I don't understand. I would fail to understand anyone from any, you know, I have no truck with any religion, but, and I'm aware that a lot of people who are operating under religious understanding have got issues, but really, whoever they might be, whatever religion they might practice, I don't think they would find anything objectionable in that statement, because, you know, it's an expression of the truth. And this is, you know, thousands of years old. It's eternal truth. The universe is matter, as ordered and systemized by the intelligence of God. It was created by God's pronouncing his own name, at the sound of which light and the heavens sprung into existence. The name of God is in itself a creative power. What itself that name is known to God only. All music or natural melody is a faint and broken echo of the creative name. The Druidic symbol of it is three pencils of light. Of these three lines in various conjunctions was framed the first or bardic alphabet. Knowledge and religion cannot be separated. It's a holy science. It's not about whether you're prepared to believe in something because you've been told to believe in it. It's about whether or not it's true. It's beyond all that. We're just dealing with the truth here. As Mark Passio states, the idea that the truth cannot be reached or understood is nonsense. But it's all several shades of grey, palpable nonsense. The universe is in its substance eternal and imperishable, but subject to successive cycles of disillusion and renovation. The soul is a particle of the deity, possessing in embryo all his capabilities. Its action is defined and regulated by the nature of the physical organization it animates. The lowest point of sentient existence is that in which evil is unmitigated by any particle of good. From this point, existence ascends by cycles of genera until it attains its acme by being blended with that of the deity. The human cycle is the middle one in which good and evil are equipoised. Every human being is a free agent, the soul, according to its choice, being liable to fall back into the lower cycles or capable of rising into the higher. You're a free agent. You have free will. Whoever we are, we've always got free will. Probation ceases with the human cycle. Above it, good becomes the dominant, evil the helpless principle. Continually thus ascending, the soul becomes at last united to and part of God, and in God again pervades the universe. A soul which has passed the probationary state has the power of returning to it and resuming for the good of mankind the morphosis of humanity. The reincarnation as such is felt in its action and effects through the whole race, whose nature is thus taken by the superior being. Okay, so you know, you get, whether they be actual or mythical figures, you've got these archetypes like Krishna, Jesus, the Buddha, King Arthur, Robin Hood, dare I say. Would that be appropriate given where we are right now? You know, it doesn't really matter whether it's the truth. It's an understanding, it's a fable that has a resonance. You know, we're not looking for in certain situations. We're listening to the story in what it can teach us, what we can understand from it, maybe in terms of its imagery. You know, and that's why these stories of King Arthur and Robin Hood and Jesus and the Buddha, all of them, they resonate with people. They're very powerful. The controllers understand exactly how powerful they are. That's why they're looking, you know, sometimes to push the latest puppet in front of the people in the hope that he may be mistakenly taken as their saviour. Because, of course, when that happens, the people go back and say, oh, it doesn't matter now. Russell Brand's here, bless him. He's going to take control of it all. And it's fine, you know. Don't worry about him, the fact he's in bed with one of the Rothschilds clan. Don't worry about that at all. The soul which prefers evil to good retrogrades to a cycle of animal existence, the baseness of which is on a par with the turpitude of its human life. So we're talking, you know, this is the Druids writing about reincarnation. The process of brutalization commences at the moment when evil is voluntarily preferred to good. To whatever cycle the soul falls, the means of reattaining humanity are always open to it. Every soul, however frequent its relapses, will ultimately attain the power, the proper end of its existence, union with God. The creation of animals commenced with that of water molecules. Terrestrial animals are of a higher order than the aquatic and rise through distinct gradations up to man. Animals approach the human cycle in proportion to their utility and gentleness. Every animal may be killed by man in support or defence of his own life. Prior to the creation of man, night light alone prevailed. Man was created with the first rising sun. Death or the dissolution of the present material organisation is a simultaneous outward life, or the assumption of a new existence. The soul passes through an indefinite number of these migrations till it attains deity. A finite being cannot support eternity as a sameness or monotony of existence. The eternity of the soul, until it merges in the deity, is a succession of states of new sensations, the soul in each unfolding new capabilities of enjoyment. In creation, there is no evil which is not a greater good than an evil. Think about that. There is no evil which is not a greater good than an evil. Because if an evil causes good men to take action, and remember, all that is required for tyranny to take hold is that good men take no action, then of course you can see who benefits from that. But the idea is so that the evil is there to kind of shake us or kick us up the backside and say, hey, it's about time you paid attention to this, because this needs dealing with. And in that sense, it becomes a force for good. The things called rewards and punishments are so secured by eternal ordinances that they are not consequences but properties of our acts and habits, the law of cause and effect. Except for crimes against society, the measure of punishment should be that which nature itself deals to the delinquent. Perfect penitence is entitled to pardon. That penitence is perfect which makes the utmost compensation in its power for wrong inflicted, and willingly submits to the penalty prescribed. The atonement of penitence, and this is very important in the light of what Michael's going to be t- touching on later. The atonement of penitents who voluntarily submit themselves to death in expiation of guilt incurred is perfect. The souls of all such pass on to the higher cycles of existence. The justice of God cannot be satisfied except by the sacrifice of life in lure of life. Caesar's words are very remarkable, defining the doctrine of vicarious atonement with theological precision. The Druids hold that by no other way than the ransoming of a man's life by the life of man is reconciliation with the divine justice of the immortal gods possible. Such are a few of the principal doctrines of a religion, which at the time, I would say a holy science, because religion's got negative connotations, of a holy science which at one time professed from the shores of the Baltic to the Straits of Gibraltar. In France, its central university was at Dreux. In Britain, it was numbered 31 chief seats of education. Each seat was a kephaeth, or city, the capital of a tribe. Their names were as follows, and these are the seats of the three Archdruids of Britain. Caer Troia, Caer Lud, which is London, Caer Evroc, known as York, Caer Leon, Carleon, or Carleon, and these are the seats of the chief Druids of Britain. I think there are 10 of them, and they are, as you can see, dotted across the country. You've got Caer Cains, which is Canterbury, Caer Wyn, Winchester. Have I got time to go through all these? I don't know. We've got Winchester. I'll just read through the modern versions. Bristol, Leicester, St. Albans, Old Sarum, which is Salisbury, Uroxeter, Lincoln, Carlisle, Cambridge, Gloucester, Manchester, Chichester, Palmcaster, Cirencester, Colchester, Dorchester, Worcester, Carmarthen, Chester, Carnarvon, Porchester, Exeter, Doncaster, Salchester, Warwick, and Caerbaden, which is Bath. Now, this is testimony to the fact that this ancient knowledge was regarded, Britain was regarded as a seat of learning. Foreigners used to come here for their education to go to these centres. Now, when we're talking later about re-establishing grand juries, it occurs to me that maybe they can be re-established in some of these centres that are listed here from R.W. Morgan's work. The students at these colleges numbered at times 60,000 souls, amongst whom were included the young nobility of Britain and Gaul. The authority and privileges of the Druidic order were very great. They sat as magistrates deciding all questions of law and equity. They regulated and presided over the rites and ceremonies of religion. The power of excommunication lodged in their hands put the party against whom it was issued out of the pale of the law. They were exempt from military duties, taxes and imposts. A tenth of the land was appropriate for their support. None but a Druid could offer sacrifice, nor was any candidate admissible to the order who could not prove his genealogy from free parents for 9 generations back. The consent of the head of the clan or of 12 fathers of families in the clan was necessary to the public admission of a candidate into the order. The examinations preparatory to full initiation into the two higher grades of the Bard and the Druid were of great severity. An Ovid or Vates might claim his grade by proving himself in public examination before the head of the clan and 12 Druids, master of the special art or science he professed to teach or exercise. None but the initiated were taught the esoteric doctrines of the order, hence the profound reserve maintained on certain points of their teaching by Taliesin and other Christo-Druidic bards. The sacred animal of their religion was the milk-white bull, the sacred bird, the wren, the sacred tree, the oak, the sacred plant, the mistletoe, the sacred herbs, the trefoil and the vervain, the sacred form, that of the three divine letters or rays in the shape of a cross, symbolizing the triple aspect of God, the sacred herbs and plants, with another plant, hyssop, the emblem of fortitude in adversity, were gathered on the sixth day of the moon. The vast monumental remains of the Druidic establishment extend over Britain, from Cornwall to the Hebrides. In South Britain, or Logria, the central temples were those of Amber and Belin, Stonehenge. In Albin, Perth and its vicinity, in Cambria, Mona, were the chief districts for the obelisk churches and the splendid national ceremonies therein performed. Each of these temples was a planetarium, or representation of the system of the heavens. The principles on which they are constructed are strictly astronomical, and the accuracy with which the ponderous monoliths which compose them are adjusted demonstrates a very high state of mechanical science. And so it will, because it's a holy science. It's not just mechanical, it's divine. The Druidic principles allowed no monolith to be profaned by the touch of steel or other metal. Neither could any of other than massive single stones, solid throughout, be used in their temples. These architectural remains of the old Britannic religion lie for the most part on the elevated ridges or in the mountain solitudes of the island, indicating their construction to have commenced at that remote date when the lowlands were still partially submerged. In Greece and Italy, these Japhet ruins are known as the Cyclopean or Titanic. The Druids of Britain, observes Dr. Stukeley in his work on Stonehenge, advanced their inquiries to such heights as should make the moderns ashamed of themselves, and we may with reason conclude there was something very extraordinary in those principles which prompted them to such a noble spirit as produced these works, for which grandeur and simplicity exceed any of the European wonders. In strictness, none of the Druidic circles can be termed temples, for the Druids taught inhabitations of the deity, the soul, the invisible, and the universe, the visible temple. The monolithic structures were types only of the latter. The great festivals of Druidism were three: the celestial festivals of the rise and fall of the year, and the winter festival. At the spring festival, the Beltan, or sacred fire, was brought down by means of a burning lens from the sky, from the sun. No hearth in the island was held sacred until the fire on it had been relit from the Beltan. The Beltan became the Easter festival of Christianity. It was co-opted by Christianity as the midwinter festival, in which the mistletoe was cut with the golden crescent from the sacred oak, became Christmas. The mistletoe with its three berries was the symbol of the deity in its triple aspect, its growth on the oak, of the incarnation of the deity in man. The hypothyreal altar in the Druidic circle was called the cromlech, or stone of adoration, literally the stone of bowing. On it the hostia, or victim to be immolated, was laid, and in order that the blood might run off more easily, its position was inclined. Near it, another stone received in an excavation the aqua pura, or holy water, that is, rainwater direct from heaven. But once back, you know, you see how important the subject of water is and what's going on right now. Druidism itself was ordinarily known as Yemen, the stone. And there's a bit there, a description of the of some of the garb of the Druids, which I'm not going to read now. You can read this on the website if you wish to take it any further. So I just want to move on to the final part of this. Diodorus Maximus quotes a Druidic triad as well known to the Greeks. Worship the gods, do no man wrong, be valiant for your country. Valerius Maximus mentions a curious fact illustrative of the sincerity of their faith in the doctrines they held. The Druids have so firm a conviction of the immortality of the soul that they had advanced sums of money to their friends on the understanding that such money, or its equivalent, is to be repaid when they meet after death. And that made me chuckle when I read that, because I thought, hey, Oops, there might be something I can use here. I can, you know, if I need a loan, I could say to him, listen, Louis, I'll take it now, but it's on the understanding that I'm going to pay you back in the next life, you know, be out of this material world. It'll come back to you, but maybe not in this material world. That could be, that would be a very genuine offer, wouldn't it, Michael? I'm not saying I'm not going to make that. It is certain, states Lucan, the Druidic nations have no fear of death. Their religion rather impels them to seek it. Their souls are its masters, and they think it contemptible to spare a life, the return of which is so sure. The Druidic religion, in its corrupted Asiatic or Semitic form of Buddhism, is still the religion of nearly one half of mankind. We have noticed its leading features, therefore, at greater length than the compass of this little volume would have warranted us in doing those of any obsolete or defunct faith, such as the mythologies of Greece and Rome. You know, and it's from reading works like that, you come to this this understanding of the deep, rich heritage that lies, you know, under these veils of distraction that have descended across us, whoever we might be, wherever we may be from. The reality is increasingly plain for us all to see. Everything is fake. Actors, politicians, celebrities, estate agents, particularly lawyers and judges, they are utter phonies. But often they're the front guys being played by, you know, the puppet master, who's being played by another puppet master. And so it goes on. We live in a world in which, at least in the olden days, it was quite clear. If someone was going to stop you on the highway and demand monies from you, he'd point a gun at you. You know, nowadays, they do it by a Roman system, of course. And remember, what we just read about the Druids, they found it very, very difficult, if not impossible, to subjugate the peoples of these lands, because they were such awkward buggers who would know exactly what their rights were and would resist all forms of tyranny. But nevertheless, we've had a slow 1,000-year-plus attempt they've layered it on over the top of the truth, a system of Roman law. So we end up now with the highway robber going around in a day-glow jacket with his blue light flashing, you know, pulling you over and just trying to effectively hijacking you for sums of money that he's got no right to claim off you. You know, it's not been to a court. Speaking of courts, that's an image there of a noted jester. The court jester, and a lot of those people who are acting as celebrities, as actors, I'm thinking, you know, when I look at that, I thought, hey, oops, it looks to me like that Irish guy, the prancing prince of pretend himself, whose name, what's he called? You know the guy I mean. The camp Irish
Graham
guy.
Norton.
Huh?
Do you mean Graham Norton?
Graham Norton. This guy was in the employ of, I think it was, I think it was Elizabeth the First. He was the court jester, okay? And the role of the jester is still apparent. They still use these guys. That's why a lot of these comedians who you see on television are so highly paid. They are weapons of mass distraction, offering nothing, just spinning around clever webs of delusion and deceit for amusement. And of course, if you're in a state of amusement, that means you're in a state of mindlessness, because you're not musing, you're not thinking, you're amused, your brain's switched off. And these guys have been, you know, they've been used by the controllers for countless years. We've got other things also that are at play. As George Orwell stated, quite clearly, football, beer, and above all, gambling filled up the horizons of their minds. To them, to keep them in control was not difficult. Again, weapons of mass distraction, the BBC, bread, beer, and circuses. You know, and if you throw into the mix what's going on with Russell Brand and this new age woo-woo, there's no such thing as the new age, it's the new cage. It's not a new age religion, it's the new cage. And all they're looking to do is to take you from one cage to another. Okay? Oh, don't worry about that. We're in a prison, but don't worry about that, because we can have a party. We can still party in the prison. We can take these drugs, get off our tits, and just, you know, not do anything about it. It's just new age nonsense, because of course all it's doing is promoting inaction. When of course we're being subjected to all kinds of tyranny, and you know, and because it matters. You know, and this image here, I've been through it, Mabu's been through it, of the police aiding in a matter they've got no right to be there. It's a civil matter. The fact is, the bailiff cannot get in without the assistance of the police in Britain in 2014. Because they are utter fake, they're utter phonies. But they are dependent upon, to think back to the image of the puppets, these are more, the police, sad to say, well, maybe not sad to say, it's a fact, I don't think anyone in here is going to disagree, it's a fact that they are controlled, excessively mind-controlled individuals who've given up their God-given divinity, whereby they can choose for themselves, they can act in free will. They don't have to follow orders. Here's a guy who is a dangerous criminal operating in Nottingham. I don't think he works on a Sunday, but he's called David Caress. These are the kinds of people we've got to stop taking action, because ultimately, you know, the judge won't be signing any order stating that they've got permission to go and do this. Because he didn't want to put his name to something that would be clear evidence of a huge liability that he's going to incur. So they send out their goon squad in the shape of the likes of these heavyweights. David Koresh, an ex-miner, used to work at Shirebrook Pit, which is just 6 miles away from here. He's actually a criminal, okay? Joe's had dealings with him. There's other people in this room who I'm sure have seen him on YouTube. He's a notorious guy on YouTube. There's a film out there that's now had over 80,000 hits. You know, and in the past, what did our ancestors do about it? I'm from originally from a place called Huddersfield, but I've lived in Nottingham for over half my life. Nottingham was where the Luddite movement began 200 years ago, when skilled workers were being put out of work as a result of the technology that the mill owners were introducing. And these were skilled, independent men who were able to make a good living at their job. But of course, the profit motive kicks in with the mill owners. Forget that. We've got a loom here that will do the job of 10 men. You're sacked. And of course, at that time, there was no social security benefit. There was no net for them to fall into. They were literally fighting for their right to put food in the mouths of their families and for their freedom. So the idea that a Luddite was in fact someone who was against technology is nonsense. He was actually against people having their jobs wiped out, you know, skillful jobs wiped away as a consequence of, again, what you may term to be genocidal actions by the mill owners, you know. So if you're getting rid of 10 of your croppers, as they used to do in Huddersfield, a cropper would maybe have a family of about, what, 5-6 kids, and you're getting rid of 10 croppers, you think about how that would spread, the effect that would have on the community. So these men were right, and they did what they thought was right. They took action. And it occurred, you know, right from Nottingham up to Huddersfield, into Lancashire, into the towns of East Lancashire, Bradford, Leeds, all around that area. And these men were systematically wiped out. They had a pony trial in York, where I think it was 14 of them were hanged on a single day on trumped up charges. And this was 200 years ago. It was 1813. You know, and this is why I asked the question. Well, I was asking myself the question, given that I'm from stock that can go, you know, goes back in these lands number of generations, and that I have this, and many of us here, no matter where we might be from, have got this innate sense within us that, you know, it's not meant to be like this, and we are free beings, and everyone who suggests anything other than that is in fact a liar who is clearly attempting to control you. Whatever reason. And I thought, you know, the Luddites did it. They didn't have any fear. At one point, there was at least 15,000 troops stationed in the West Riding of Yorkshire. That is, again, how fearful the authorities were of the people. Interestingly, in 1812, the only ever British Prime Minister who had been assassinated whilst in office was taken out in the lobby of the Houses of Parliament. Do you know his name, Michael?
Not a fan, no.
Spencer Percival. You can check this out. And again, it was all connected with the textile trade, because it was some kind of merchant who was very disgruntled about how he was being shafted by the government through various unfair taxes and systems of control, that decided he'd had enough of this guy, Spencer Percival. Remember, it was all after the French Revolution. Times were bubbling under. He had the work of a number of, you know, this was the Romantic era, and as well as the Industrial Revolution, there was a lot of activity and political nature and spiritual nature bubbling under, and the authorities wanted to keep a lid on it. And of course, when the Prime Minister was assassinated, Spencer Percival, 1812, I think it was, in the lobby at Westminster, well, they came down heavy, and the obvious target for them was the Luddites. You know, and so there's a lot of negativity by the, you know, whoever wins the propaganda war gets to write the history. But of course, the truth always spills out, and that's where we're at right now. And it's getting very difficult for the controllers, our would-be controllers, to keep a lid on it, because we've got the information now, and we've got access to it. First they'll ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. I'm sure that resonates with everyone here. I like that picture because really, you know, sometimes people get, think about Russell Brand, think about the Pied Piper, people getting sucked in by this weapon of mass distraction, attracted to the guy himself, but not looking at what is really going on outside the image, the bigger picture. They're focusing on his finger. Where's his? Instead of looking to where he's pointing, you see what I mean? In that sense, it's a weapon of mass distraction. The tragedy of life is not death, but what we let die inside of us while we live. Native American saying. This is one that I found rather amusing. The Force is a beautiful magical field of infinite consciousness. It surrounds us. It penetrates us. It is us. And when you learn its intent and how to flow within it, it will reveal incomprehensible marvels. But what if someone subverts its power, defies its intent, and twists it to serve their own egomaniacal desires? Then we ditch the hippie shit and get bloody. So the court gesture, you know, it's all around us. Russell Brand, as far as I'm concerned, is the latest incarnation of that, as are most, if not all, of the comedians who operate with a license out of the BBC, the Bread, Beer and Circus show. And interestingly, I don't think there's many people in here who are under the age of 40. That's significant too, because as Carl Jung noted, really, up until the age of 40, all you're just doing is research. Because when you've got that information, you've done your research and you've reached that knowledge, the next stage is to apply the wisdom whereby you put it into action. And right now, we're at that point where we have to take action. I just thought I'd share that with you. Again, you may well be in the city, but there's nothing to stop you climbing up a ladder and looking at the stars. Or lighting a gaslight nearby you. That's a very symbolic image that I like it, because, you know, we've got this ability within our neighbourhoods to actually make a difference through whatever we're doing. You know, and that again, a picture, if a picture's worth 1,000 words, that may well be worth like 10,000 words, because that tells you so much about what is going on with the phony psychiatric system. And how, you know, that everyone has been fooled, and we are really, you know, right now, tapped with that beast in the corner with us. So, you know, as I draw this together, this is the first section, as I bring it to a close, I just want us to focus really on what I began this. This is a remembrance, okay? It's a time now for you to remember who you are if you haven't done so already. It's a time now for us to put into action that which we've learned and that which is applicable under natural law. Forget the phony statutory bullshit of their system. It is utterly fake. There's no remedy to be had in it. It's now time for us to find and create our own remedies, which is exactly what we're about right now. I think that's, you know, that's palpably why you're here, why some of you have driven 2 hours to be here today. Okay, so I've gone into some detail in some of these areas in the ark. If you want to take it further, you can go onto the new self-realization website, roguemail.org. And we'll bring that first session to an end, and I'm going to hand over to Michael.
Make sure your appreciation for Michael.
Thank you.